When you look at modern works of art, one thing often stands out. They're ugly. This is just a urinal, or a blank canvas, or a giant rock. If you're Catholic, it's especially embarrassing to see what passes for art or sacred art in modern Catholic churches. There are the bland, soulless buildings that are supposed to be churches, the childish artwork that announces the synod, and just bizarre works like the so-called depiction of the resurrection in the Pope Paul VI audience hall. And in today's episode, I'm going to explain why it's not a coincidence that the defenders of this ugly art are usually theologically or politically liberal. Before I explain why, though, let me provide a few more examples of this kind of ugly art in Catholic spaces. In 2020, the Vatican hosted a nativity scene with figures that looked like creepy Fisher-Price toys. As the world was enduring the darkness of the pandemic, one news story records how people longed for a more traditional nativity display.
It made me think of bowling pins with a baby Jesus as a ball. I liked it, but I preferred last year's. But it's not too bad.
Here's another one. Heidi Schlumpf, a senior correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, a periodical that often platforms dissenting voices against the church, wrote the following on X. Happy Feast of the Immaculate Conception. This is my favorite image of Mary from the Basilica of the Annunciation in Nazareth. Now, I've been to the Basilica of the Annunciation multiple times, and I really enjoy the dozens of depictions of Mary and Jesus from all around the world. My favorite is this Chinese depiction of Mary and Jesus, where Jesus has little panda slippers. But the depiction of Mary from America is easily the ugliest. Well, Canada is a close second, but it's more incomprehensible than ugly. The one from the United States, it looks like someone vomited up oil paint and aluminum foil. It's objectively ugly. Now, art can be ugly if it's depicting objectively ugly things, like the devil. But art that depicts the most venerated creature in God's creation, Mary, the Mother of God, should be breathtaking. At the very least, it should not be ugly. Here's my last example of bad Catholic art. Before it was redesigned in 1967, the Newman Hall at the University of California in Berkeley looked like a typical Catholic church. The redesigned church, however, looks like a concrete bomb shelter. It's cold, drab, dark, gray. The Newman Center website describes it this way. The building conveys a sense of the primeval, of spiritual realities that have lasted down through the ages. It is an architectural statement of Christianity with its roots in the altar of Abraham and in the catacombs of Rome, but is compatible with an era when space and human freedom are explored. The examples of bad modern art, and especially bad modern Catholic art, could be multiplied ad infinitum. Although some might say that beauty is subjective, so who am I to say any of this art is bad? And I'm sure there's going to be some commenters to this video who will say, but I like that Newman Chapel, or I personally think the American Mosaic of Mary is quite beautiful. Beauty is subjective, in some ways, because it appeals directly to us as a subject. But beauty is not completely subjective. Beauty is an objective reality in the world, and it cannot be changed merely by something like democratic vote. Medieval philosophers like St. Thomas Aquinas and Duns Scotus taught that in reality there are things called transcendentals. They are properties that all beings have in certain degrees. These are things like truth, goodness, oneness, and according to some authors, beauty. The transcendentals are also convertible. They represent the same thing when seen from different metaphysical points of view. For example, a good tree will have being and not lack the being it ought to have. The intellect will recognize it truly has the properties of a tree, like bearing fruit, for example. It is a true example of a tree. However, the sensitive appetite of the soul will see the tree is beautiful because it has what trees ought to have. Same thing, different metaphysical points of view. But when we see a dying tree, we recognize it is a bad tree. It's not morally bad, it just is naturally deficient. It lacks being. It's not a true or archetypal tree. And because of this, it's an ugly tree. And since God just is unlimited, infinite being itself, that means God is perfect truth, God is perfect goodness, and God is perfect beauty. Whatever is beautiful in this world is in some way reflecting the truth and goodness of God himself. Now, one reason liberals and other modern people embrace bad art is because they reject the idea of objective truth. For them, truth is entirely subjective. There is no such thing as absolute truth. There is just your truth, my lived experience. If someone says that something is beautiful, well, you can't say that they're wrong. You just have to respectfully disagree because their truth can't be mistaken, apparently. But beauty is not purely subjective. St. Thomas Aquinas once compared beauty to God the Son and said that beauty has three elements: integrity or perfection, since those things which are impaired are by the very fact ugly; due proportion or harmony; and lastly, brightness or clarity, hence things are called beautiful which have a bright color. Now, this shouldn't be taken as an exhaustive definition of beauty, because some art with bright colors is pretty dreadful. Instead, Aquinas is saying the presence of light, proportion, and perfection are indicative of the objective nature of beauty. In fact, across all cultures, symmetrical faces are considered more beautiful than asymmetrical faces. And even though the cultural styles may differ, beautiful architecture tends to rely on the same mathematical ratios, like the golden ratio, 1 to 1.61. Personally, I think one quality beautiful art has is that it takes us out of ourselves and it lifts us up to something beyond, something universal. You see this, for example, in beautiful cathedrals that lift us up to God. You also see it in beautiful non-Christian worship sites, beautiful secular buildings, and even beautiful natural features of the earth, up, out, and beyond. This kind of art, or these kinds of beautiful things, it lifts us up to contemplate other universal good things, friendship, justice, love, and the greatest good of all, God. But ugly art doesn't do that. It doesn't care about lifting us up to God or even to any transcendent values. Ugly art cares more about shock or subverting our expectations or hammering home just some kind of message about mankind. It brings us down to think more about mankind than the things that transcend. For example, the reason the resurrection sculpture looks so weird in the Pope Paul VI audience hall is because the artist was trying to make a point about the threat of nuclear war, not something awe-inspiring in Christ's resurrection itself. Likewise, the 2020 Vatican Nativity scene doesn't lift us up to God. Instead, parts of it, like the astronaut, are supposed to remind us about how amazing it was that human beings made it to the moon. But at Christmas, shouldn't we celebrate the God-man who made the moon and the stars and the entire universe instead of focusing ourselves down on what human beings have done? Modern art also values what matters to humans more than what's transcendent, in that it values things like efficiency more than these objective goods. So older art and architecture is usually generous in its designs and its features, not purely about function or minimalism. And in this, it lifts us up and beyond. But modern art often considers this gaudy or wasteful. The designer of the 2020 Vatican display describes its weird Fisher-Price-like sculptures in this way. The choice of these cylindrical blocks is linked to the modularity of the project, which sought to provide a formal model that was easily replicable and simple to make, to apply to the production of large ceramic sculptures depicting figures. Using a circular plan module, it was then possible to add elements to create individual characters, and not only for the precipice. Some forms were freely inspired by elements of industrial production of the time, like spark plugs, which have the screw thread at the base. The architect of the Berkeley Newman Center was steeped in a genre called brutalism, which uses minimalist concrete designs in its architecture. His previous experience had been in designing things like freeway overpasses. The cold, blocky design of brutalism is often associated with Soviet apartment blocks or low-income housing projects in the United States, many of which have fallen into decay because the people who live there don't care about keeping it up. What's there to keep up? They've succumbed to despair because of the inhuman conditions in which they live, caused a lot by the architecture.
It makes me feel as if this is not my home. This is only a place where I sleep and pay my rent. It's just like you're closed in a corner with no way out, nowhere to go.
However, the defenders of brutalism don't want us to value unequal art that lifts us up and beyond. Instead, they say concrete brutalism is a good kind of art because it promotes values like socialism. In fact, this defender of brutalism says that's one of the positive values of this architectural style.
Accurately understood as a movement underpinned by a utopian socialist ideology. And it's important to get that phrase right, utopian socialist ideology. Brutalist structures are a means for achieving an integrated and thoughtful way of life, a life where every individual knows their role in the collective. Look at the Barbican, for instance, a full city in a brutalist getup. It has housing and a theater and nature and stores all woven together in a confusing 3D matrix of slabs, walls, and walkways. Contrary to what you might think, the massive, ugly, and imposing structures are more like a byproduct of this utopian thinking. The ultimate goal is to create communal spaces and promote social cohesion all through architecture.
Tucker Carlson made a similar point in a recent interview he had with Andrew Cuomo.
You believe that postmodern architecture is designed to kill your spirit?
Of course.
What's
Why?
The message of it? Well, look, anything that we make with our hands, it's the purest expression of our creativity. So there's a purpose behind everything that we make. There's a message behind all of it, as there is in all art. You don't paint a painting with no vision behind it. You paint a painting because you're saying something. And so buildings that are warm and human and that elevate the human spirit are pro-human. And brutalism, for example, or the IMPEG glass boxes that crowd every city in the United States, those are not elevating. What's the message of working in a cube in a room with a synthetic drop ceiling and drywall on the walls and fluorescent lighting ahead of you and no privacy at all? What's the message? The message is really clear. You mean nothing. You are replaceable. You are a widget in a bin awaiting assembly. You're just a cog in a machine. You have no value. And everyone kind of ignores this, like, oh, well, that's the way buildings have always been. No, that's not true. And architecture and anything made by human hands is the purest expression of the society that produced it.
Many liberals detest classic art because it's not egalitarian. They want everything to be beautiful in its own way. But if everything is beautiful, then nothing is beautiful. In George Orwell's dystopian novel 1984, the totalitarian government Big Brother is represented as saying, "There will be no distinction between beauty and ugliness. There will be no curiosity, no enjoyment of the process of life. All competing pleasures will be destroyed." A lot of modern art is bad because it focuses primarily on the artist, how he subverts expectations, how he shocks, or just to amplify human creativity and ingenuity. Look at the new thing we did. Nobody could have expected we would do it this way. If you don't like it, then you just don't get it. But truly good art, it uses ingenuity, even subversion, for the purpose of lifting us up to contemplate that which is true, good, and beautiful. Consider Michelangelo's Pietà. You don't immediately think about the ingenuity involved, and there's plenty of it. Instead, the depiction lifts you up and out from yourself and allows you to fixate on the mystery of the death of the God-man and his body being cradled by the Theotokos, the mother of God. As I said, the sculpture is ingenious. Mary is not sculpted to be life-sized. By scale, she'd be about 10 feet tall, but the folding of her robes hides this fact, so that we recall she is a mother first and foremost, cradling her son like she did when he was born in Bethlehem. Early critics also complained that Mary's face was too young in the depiction, which once again recalls her early maternity. Michelangelo told the critics that chastity enjoys eternal youth. And to be clear, beautiful art comes from a wide variety of cultures. And it doesn't always have to be about lifting up to the good. Works of art that depict the horror of war can show beauty when it's eclipsed by ugliness, such as Goya's The Third of May, 1808. Picasso's Guernica shows this in an abstract way as it depicts the 1937 Nazi bombing of Guernica, Spain. It also doesn't have to be European. I personally enjoy artwork from the Japanese Edo period, like the Great Wave of Katsushika Hokusai. It's no wonder I like this particular piece, because it was an inspiration for European Impressionists like Monet and Van Gogh, and I enjoy these works in lieu of more traditional Renaissance art. Good art doesn't have to be a bunch of depictions of biblical figures in Renaissance style. It doesn't even have to be religious. One of my favorite paintings is the 1942 oil canvas work Nighthawks by Edward Hopper. It doesn't lift me up to the divine, but it transports me to another kind of beautiful time, a time illuminated by gently buzzing fluorescent lights of an all-night diner that has all kinds of stories to tell, if you're willing to listen. And I'm not a snob either. You can find beauty in all kinds of settings, not just ones in fancy museums. One of my favorite artistic guilty pleasures is 80s synth, a kind of blend of cool, dark, smoky, faux future. Now, in some cases, liberal and modern art is ugly because it abandoned its transcendent purpose. It tries to do good, but in a deficient, man-centered way. So you're always focused down on the human element rather than to the transcendent element. But some bad Catholic art has a more sinister origin. Some of it, I believe, is meant to lead us away from the good. Such is the case in the artwork done by Marco Rupnik. Rupnik, if you didn't know, became infamous after credible allegations of sexual abuse were made against him by several nuns. What this priest allegedly did to these women is so vile, I'm not even going to repeat it here. But according to the allegations, he frequently cloaked his abuse in religious language, saying that the sex acts he was doing were imitations of God and the Trinity. If the allegations against Father Rupnik are true, then he is a man deeply steeped in evil. And if they are true, they explain why his art, which had been featured all over the world, has a stilted and ugly quality about it. Genuine Byzantine iconographers have pointed out that his icons and murals, they lack parallelism. They're crooked. They're subtly distorted. And most alarming in his works are the dead black eyes of the features being depicted. Hilary White of the Sacred Art Project puts it this way. Rupnik's work is deliberately, theologically, and aesthetically transgressive. It aims not to illustrate or even didactically explain Christian theological ideas, but to distort them. It uses that sacral language to desacralize what it's talking about. It takes the extreme precision and rationality of Byzantine Christian art and creates chaos with it, visual gibberish. Its style, by imitating children's scribbles, implies that the Christian things it depicts are silly, imprecise, and ultimately irrelevant nonsense. Stories fit only for children. So to summarize, much of what I do as an apologist is to defend the truth of the Catholic faith when it's attacked, to refute lies and errors about the faith. A lot of that is also tied up in defending the goodness of Catholicism. But an enemy of the faith, whether they know it or not, might be more effective attacking the church's beauty instead of its truth, because its beauty and its truth are the same thing, just looked at from different points of view. So I hope this episode will be helpful for you to see that we need to defend not just what is true and good in our Catholic faith, but in these ugly times, we need to defend what is beautiful as well. Thank you for watching, and I hope you have a very blessed day.